Bentham believed that people who would not rule their bodies, fashion their behavior to the dictates of the state, must be made to become subjects, and that it is the role of nation states to train us in our role as subjects, which is done by convincing us to rule our bodies, i.e. turn them into the subjects of rule. I've been arguing over the past few months that this internalization of discipline process is the complement on the level of our design as human beings by power, the crafting of our interior psychological landscapes, that this was the complement to the crafting of the exterior landscape of a global economy via the imposition of the 19th century gold standard. But Bentham set about crafting us with a vision of a new social arrangement. And you can only craft what is by comparing it to what is to be. And for Bentham, this was progress, civilization, perfect reason. So these key myths have been used to shape our interior psychological landscapes, i.e., we have to give our consent. But none of this would make sense without our atomization, i.e., we would not willingly, with our conscious minds, agree. Atomization is key to the viability, to the credibility of all the ideologies of class, economic and political. From market laws to violence as inherent in human nature, to merit rises, to wealth is created by technology. Let's look a second at that question, what is wealth? What we're taught is that wealth is only what is bought and sold. And those great ideas we're told that are the source of it don't mean a thing unless they enter into exchange in the market economy. What's wealth creation? A parent squeezed and children abandoned is wealth creation, is what we're told. Enslaved brothers and sisters work to death. Speculation by the financial interests, poisoned lakes, so factories thrive, externalities. This is wealth creating. A year and a half or so ago, Lawrence Lessig, participating in a forum on KQED, said, quote, "I'm a liberal. I believe in markets. They're an important part of wealth. Wealth people respect," he said. Really? And then Gar Alperovitch, about the same time, said, quote, "New technologies are the absolute building blocks of wealth." Are they? Only when power owns the words. Technology don't mean a thing if it conflicts with controlling you and me. Until we end power, it will always be used to enslave us. Bentham, he had a scheme for using human beings instead of steam in steam engines. Is that an advance in technology? It creates wealth in the economy. Shouldn't we be celebrating? Meanwhile, the real work mounts in proportion to the fear and misanthropy of this minuscule few who sit on the hopes of the many in the name of management and of moving steadily toward perfection. In discussing the impact of automation, the pundits I've been hearing keep focusing on what it means for our economy. So they'll credit Keynes for his prescience in recognizing that the system would come to this question eventually, i.e., the pundits will examine it economically from that end, but there's total silence about what it means to our bodies. And Keynes, by the way, was also just continuing Bentham, who was also concerned about technological unemployment, so he could help smooth out the business cycle, to quote Polanyi. This issue of exploiting pauperism or poverty is at the heart of a make-use system, at the heart of class, because it must first make paupers to exploit them. Technology in this scheme will always be means to further this higher, quote-unquote, goal. In The Great Transformation, Polanyi, beginning his explanation of the role of poverty in a market economy, writes that, quote, "neither the new wealth nor the new poverty was yet, at the end of the 18th century, opening of the 19th century, quite comprehensible," he says. Across the political divides, there was, quote, "misunderstanding of the nature of pauperism in the nascent market economy," unquote, which, he says, grew exponentially with the growth of wealth, quote unquote, with the so-called Industrial Revolution. And recall Bentham's words, the task of government is to increase want in order to make the physical sanction of hunger effective, unquote. And Townsend said, hunger will tame the fiercest animals, i.e., the function of poverty is to keep us working. It matters little to power how, as long as our heads stay bowed. Polanyi wrote his great work in the 1940s, so at least since then, the official left has had adequate warning that there is no curbing of power's lust, not just to own, but to conquer us. This is the goal, to freeze in place their absolute supremacy. There is no chance of taming them. They are determined to install their version of perfection. We've allowed power to claim sole responsibility for the direction of the species by keeping our frame narrow. The panopticon is the optimal design for a tiny few to control the many. It means power keeps its view wide, while we see only what power puts in our view via media control. We therefore cannot see each other. We have been viewing each other and our behavior toward each other as if power doesn't exist. Never existed, as if it isn't manipulating things behind the scenes, crafting a social reality. But once we realize this is happening, it changes everything. We can begin intervening consciously in this scene, shift the action to scenes of our own direction, unbent by power. A new story is designed to break that lock power has on our thought, our view, when we stay lodged in the panopticon. A new story allows us to see each other, not through power's lens of division, but with new glasses, with a wide lens. And as we do, we keep authentic thought, conversation alive, using words we fill with the truth we hear from our bodies. I think we're looking at, as Polanyi did, a new pauperism and a great transformation, either the accomplishment of power's vision and our going along with recalcified divisions, or its replacement with our version of perfection, choosing when to work, choosing when to sleep in, all of us with true leisure, i.e., our bodies lead.